Hyderabad Diaries personal experiences. Traveling is a great source of gaining knowledge and perspective about the world we live in. I have been fortunate to travel around the world. The following is an account of one of my trips to Hyderabad. When I reached Delhi Airport, it was bustling with the usual hectic activity. In the general mass of people, there were faces which shone with tranquility, but there were many others which bore the stamp of misery. I thought to myself, that's life. Some are traveling beckoned by joy, others by tragedy. Some are heading towards material gain, others towards serious losses. At first glance, every wayfarer is bent on reaching a different destination, but as far as the ultimate lot in life, there is but a single destination, the grave. Death is the one certain goal in life, but it is the one of which everyone has the least awareness. Today, the name, Hyderabad, denotes a town, whereas it was once a state the size of Italy, with a Nawab who was reckoned to be the richest man in the world. The founder of the state was Sultan Qutub Shah, an officer of the Bahmani Sultanate. Leading a rebellion in AD 1512, he established his own independent kingdom, which later came to be known as the Qutub Shahi Sultanate. This sultanate came to an end when it was annexed by Aurangzeb to the Mughal Empire in 1685 and placed under the rule of a Mughal governor. A later governor, Nizam-ul-Mulk Asif Jah, cut himself off from the Mughal Empire to establish an independent sultanate. In undivided India, it was the largest state. When India gained its independence, the then Nawab wanted to preserve the independent status of his realm, and he did succeed in obtaining a standstill agreement from the new Indian government, signed on November 29, 1947, which would have guaranteed Hyderabad a semi-independent statehood. But his plan miscarried, largely because a local populist Muslim leader launched a militant movement, the Razakars, a private militia, that provided a motive for Indian military forces to intervene and restore order, in September 1948. Hyderabad accepted the same conditions as other former princely states and was later partitioned and disappeared from the map. Encyclopedia Britannica, 9423. Whatever the concomitant factors were, this is an oft-repeated tale in the history of Muslim sovereignty: the rebellion against central authority, followed by a temporary autonomy, which comes to a disastrous end, due to the folly and short-sightedness of the local rule. The birth and death of Hyderabad are both tragic aspects of this turbulence in the Muslim history. Hyderabad now has about 70 lakh population, 41% of which is Muslim. But more than 80% of that number reside in the old city, with only a handful in the new city. The pattern is similar in most of the cities in India. It is symptomatic of Muslims having been outdistanced by others, whereas in former times, theirs had been the most advanced community. It is also significant that all communal riots to date have taken place in the old city, and never in Secunderabad or the new city. This can be explained in terms of the high level of literacy in the newer areas, as opposed to the general illiteracy of the masses in the older areas. Experience has shown us that education acts as a buffer against communal riots. Therefore, well-wishers who genuinely wish to put a stop to riots should work towards educating the community. One of old Hyderabad's more acute problems is the narrowness of the roads and the increase in traffic. Sometimes the streets are so jammed with vehicles that you almost feel you could reach your destination faster on foot. There is a standing joke that if you offer a pedestrian a lift, he will refuse, because he's in too much of a hurry to travel by car. There are several places of historical interest in Hyderabad, which are a great attraction for tourists. The most prominent of these is the Sallar Jung Museum, where a wonderful assortment of 40,000 beautiful and exotic items are on display. Built by the former Prime Minister of Hyderabad, it is believed to be the only one of its kind in the East. Seeing great artistry, I felt that perhaps God had endowed man with this creative genius so that he would be eternally reminded of his maker's superior creativity. When Hyderabad state was in its heyday, one of the great luminaries was Nawab Ahmad al-Mulk Malvi Syed Hussain Bilgrami. Highly educated, he was fluent in English, French, Persian, and Arabic, besides his mother tongue, Urdu. He served in various capacities and later became the head of the education department. In the course of his 30 years of service, various honors and titles were bestowed upon him. In 1910, he began working on an English translation of the Quran, but it was left unfinished. As far as the ultimate lot in life, there is but a single destination, the grave. Death is the one certain goal in life, but it is the one of which everyone has the least awareness. Nawab Ahmad-ul-Mulk was renowned for his candor. In his book, Some Contemporaries, Maulvi Abdul Haq writes that once when the former Nizam of the Deccan, Mir Mehboob Ali Khan, inquired of his nobles what his subjects thought of him, they responded with exaggerated praise. Only Ahmad-ul-Mulk remained silent. When pointedly asked to give an answer, he said that people regarded him as a drunkard who paid no attention to the administration of the state or to the welfare of his subjects. The Nizam, impressed by such plain speaking, presented him with a priceless diamond ring as a reward. The Nizam's successor, Mir Osman Ali Khan, was less tolerant of Ahmad-ul-Mulk. Maulvi Abdul Haq relates how once, when Osman Ali Khan was discussing marriage, he said that Islam showed great leniency in the number of wives it allowed a man to have. Ahmad-ul-Mulk at once corrected him, pointing out that Islam, on the contrary, had laid down such strict conditions, i.e., a man must be certain that he is in a position to give equal treatment to all of his wives. Otherwise, he should not contract further marriages, that no one would dare to have more than one wife. The Shah was upset at such forthrightness and had him removed from the dinner table, where the conversation had taken place. Had Mir Osman Ali Khan but known that he himself would soon be removed from his throne, he might have shown greater tolerance towards his subordinate. Ignorance of one's destiny is often responsible for many acts of arrogance. A foretaste of the future would surely cure one of this failing. The pages of Hyderabad history have more than one vital lesson to teach us. During the regime, the prime minister's post was usually held by a Hindu nobleman. For example, in 1940, Maharaja Sir Kishan Pershad held this post, one of his assets being his fluency in Arabic, Persian, and English. The lower echelons were usually composed of Muslims, for whom such posts were reserved, as it was a major source of income for them in those days. This placed the Hindu majority at a disadvantage, but it turned out to be a blessing in disguise, for it forced them to turn their attention elsewhere. In this way, they began exploring the avenues of commerce. They proved so successful in business that they ultimately gained a monopoly of this sphere. This would appear to bear out the old saying that in every cloud, there's a silver lining. A loss can always be turned to good account, provided one is sufficiently determined about it. Experience has shown us that education acts as a buffer against communal riots. Therefore, well-wishers who genuinely wish to put a stop to riots should work towards educating the community. The strangest incident of my trip took place when I was leaving the public gardens after delivering a speech. A young man suddenly forced his way through the group of people who had collected around me to shake hands with me. He asked me what I thought my best piece of writing was. I replied that the young man standing before me was my best work to date. At this he was silent for a moment, then vowed to live up to my high expectations of him. I was greatly moved by his ardor, and beseeched the Almighty to fulfill this youth's desire and to create many more such enthusiasts who would undertake my mission of peace and spirituality after me and carry it even further along the road to progress. The Readership of A.I. Rizala, Spirit of Islam as the English version, is now quite high in Hyderabad. It is interesting that they have started a new venture called Bookstall, which involves the setting up of at least two bookstalls, one on a Friday in front of the Jamia Masjid and another on Sunday at the weekly function at the public gardens. This method of introducing the Islamic message has proved really effective, and I feel that in other towns this would be a good example to follow. An industrialist whom I met there, Mr. Prem Murarka, had received a copy of the English edition of A.I. Rizala from a Muslim friend of his. It seems that he had been so impressed by the two lines written on the front page that he could not help but read on. He decided to become a regular reader. He told me that many others in his friend circle liked A.I. Rizala and wanted to subscribe to it. It is, in fact, thanks to him that A.I. Rizala's circulation has increased there. Ignorance of one's destiny is often responsible for many acts of arrogance. A foretaste of the future would surely cure one of this failing. Another regular reader of A.I. Rizala was Mr. Mahadevan Reddy of Himyatnagar, a retired government officer who is fluent in Urdu. He told me that he had read the first volume of the translation and ignorance of one's destiny is often responsible for many acts of arrogance. A foretaste of the future would surely cure one of this failing. Commentary of the Quran written by me 5 times and was in the process of reading it the 6th time. He said he was extremely keen to have the second volume. A gathering held at the residence of an advocate, Mr. Aziz Ahmed Khan, was attended by scholars and other luminaries. In the course of the conversation, one of the facts that I learned was that when the Nizam's rule came to an end, local Muslims had been extremely worried, for, without the patronage of their old ruler, their government jobs, their sole source of livelihood, had suddenly ceased to exist. Their miseries were only temporary, however, for, finding all familiar doors closed, they turned of necessity to business, and now, after 40 years in this line, Muslims have a considerable share in the Hyderabad business community. From playing no part at all in the business world during the Nizam's rule, they managed to project themselves into the highest echelons of the successful. Personal failure can always be converted into success, and there are many who show great acumen in doing so, but sadly there are very few who can apply such personal experiences to community affairs. Personal failure can always be converted into success, and there are many who show great acumen in doing so, but sadly there are very few who can apply such personal experiences to community affairs. In an issue of AI Rizala, an article entitled, "This Is Not Islam" makes a critical appraisal of Muslims' overreaction to any overt criticism of Islam. The case in point was the misdirected attack by Muslims on an editor who had published what they considered a literary jibe at Islam. Quoting the Quran in support of restraint in such matters, the article castigates those who, on the basis of insufficient evidence, go on a rampage, burning and destroying property. One reader raised objections to the view presented in this article but did not support his argument by referring to the Quran or the Hadith. I, therefore, explained to him that if there were to be any debate on points which already had the backing of the scriptures, he should cite passages from those same scriptures in order to support his viewpoint, for the truth of the Quran and Hadith could not be disparaged by personally concocted arguments. This is a common error made by the Muslims of today, that is, whenever any debatable point has to be defended, they pass over quotations from the scriptures in favor of their own homemade reasoning, and this in spite of the fact that it is sheer heresy to do so. A Muslim must present the Quran and Hadith in answer to questions relating to the Quran and Hadith. Mr. Kishan Jaywant Rao Patil, whom I had met before, had come to Hyderabad with some of his companions. I learned that he had been reading A.I. Rizala in Urdu right from the beginning and that he had maintained a complete file of all the issues. The surprising thing in all this is that his mother tongue is Marathi, and that before our first meeting, he had not known a single word of Urdu. It seems that when I told him I would be bringing out a monthly magazine in Urdu, he was so impressed by our talks that he promptly engaged an Urdu tutor so that he would be able to read the magazine as soon as it came out. And he has been faithfully reading A.I. Rizala in Urdu from that time to the present. A friend of his who had come along with him, Mr. Gungadhar, did not understand Urdu at all, but liked to have A.I. Rizala read out to him and explained in Marathi by Mr. Kishan Patil. When I asked the latter what benefit he derived from A.I. Rizala, he claimed that his whole way of thinking had undergone a tremendous change for the better. He said that formerly he had been thinking of nothing but earning in order to make ends meet. But Al-Rizala had changed all that by giving him proper objectives in life. Impressed by the pains he had taken to learn Urdu, and Marathi being quite dissimilar and by the obvious maturity of his thinking, I spent quite some time in conversation with him. Habib Bhai, the proprietor of Pioneer Dyeing and Printing Works, related an experience which I feel is worth reproducing here. He had gone to an office, where a picture of a beautiful natural scene hung upon the wall. It bore the caption, "If you don't understand my silence, you will never understand my words." What profundity! How true it is that very little of an inner reality can be expressed in words. It is only a man of acute perceptiveness who can go beyond words to the essential message. Habib Bhai's grandfather used to advise him to learn at least one new thing every day, even if it were only a new way to tie a knot. This was a great piece of sagacity, for life is of such dynamism that one must always be on the alert to keep pace with it. It is possible, with effort, for a man to rise high in life, but it is all too easy to fall far behind. The only way, therefore, to keep on progressing is to remain in perpetual intellectual pursuit of whatever is new in the world around us.